Good morning. So last night we started to look at the presentation on karma and its results. And the first part of the text that we look at presents karma in accordance with four divisions. So the purpose of these four divisions is to gain a good understanding for the foundation of the principles of cause and effect. So we started to look at the first of the four outlines yesterday, and that is that karma is certain. What we will soon come to look at are the others. The karma greatly increases, that you do not meet with karma that you have not created, and the karma that you have created does not dissipate. So of those, we looked at part of the first, that karma is certain. So what this presents is that happiness that we all wish to experience and suffering which we all wish to be free from, both of these are results. They come about independent on causes, not any causes, their respective causes. That the causes that result in happiness are virtuous. The causes that result in suffering are non-virtuous. And this is certain or definite in that when one accumulates virtuous causes, these, when they ripen, can only ripen in happiness. And likewise, when one accumulates non-virtuous causes, it is definite or certain that these can only ripen in suffering. And this is the case for even the mildest form of happiness or the slightest form of suffering, up to the greatest forms of happiness and the mildest forms of suffering, the greatest forms of suffering. All come about independence on causes. So the outcome of that one strives to come to in this specific point is to, by recognizing the certainty of karma, that one abandons the accumulation of all non-virtue, including slight non-virtue, no longer excusing slight non-virtue as not mattering, but recognizing that non-virtue can only lead to suffering. And correspondingly, striving to accumulate virtue at every opportunity, recognizing that these are the causes that will lead to happiness. We'll continue where we concluded last night, which is on page 120, the second sub-outline in this outline of that karma is certain. And just to say again, we aren't able to produce little booklets anymore, so the text is available for purchase in the shop. So reading from the book, therefore happiness and suffering do not arise without cause or from an incongruous cause, such as the fundamental nature or isvara. happiness and suffering in general arise respectively from virtuous and non-virtuous karma in general. Also, the specific instances of happiness and suffering each arise individually from the various specific instances of the two types of karma without the slightest inconsistency. To gain certainty with regard to actions and their effects being certain and infallible is said to be the correct view of all Buddhists and praised as the foundation of all virtuous phenomena. This outline, which is the explanation for the being, for this being the basis of all virtuous phenomena, starts with the word therefore. So therefore always indicates that it's pointing to reasoning that preceded. And the reasoning was that happiness, like suffering, both are results that come from causes. And whether we talk about happiness and suffering as being slight or extreme, it comes from causes. So here, now Lama Tsongkhapa writes, therefore happiness and suffering, so again both, do not arise without a cause. So resultant happiness and suffering are not causeless. They do not come about randomly, but they come about in dependence on causes and specific causes. These, the causes of happiness are called virtuous, and the causes that result in suffering are because of that result are called non-virtuous.
Dunga gane shi ne gyule tine ki gores, gyume ba ma res, gyule tine ki gores. Chizan dunga dedo nam gyume dangas, gyume ba la ma res. Chizan da dine yin zada, gyume ba la ki gres, lakin su res, nada chiro, chiro kyangpen ba se chiro, min kyangpen ba. Diso ge dang, min diso, gyue ma res, gyume la kye wa res, koran gyue yo ma res wode. Chizan go dine yin zada, gyume se, kye wa dwe ba yin zada, gyume la kye wa ngar, nangbe ge da, di shi ade gyume ba kye wa ke ling yo ma la gyuda.
The happiness that we desire comes about independence on causes. Happiness is not causeless or random, and so too the suffering which we want to avoid. Suffering too comes about independence on its respective causes. It is not causeless or random. So this needs to be addressed because there are those who believe that happiness and suffering, for example, or there are those that believe there are those who do not assert cause and effect, saying that things happen without cause. For example, there's an ancient non-Buddhist school who point to a thorn and say, this thorn, the sharpness of this thorn, it has no cause. So this is an illustration which they present as evidence that things come about randomly or without cause.
You may get what I'm doing, you dine chiru be dus dine khonzu ki dus gyumere gyumere kya wa keling keling gor chidan ga nang be ge da dido kani shi ne gyu da ge la dine kya wa gyumere kya wa ma le se chidan gyumere gyumere ba kya wa ma se sung wa gyum chen dire
In not these non-Buddhists in not accepting cause and effect, this will include, therefore, if as they do not accept cause and effect, they therefore also do not accept future lives. They say when we die, when this body loses its vitality, we cease. Then this they illustrate through if you take a piece of paper that has a drawing on it, a picture on it. If you burn that piece of paper, the drawing is also lost. So likewise, when death comes, then a continuum ceases or consciousness ceases. There is no rebirth. So there are those who do not believe in cause and effect, who do not believe in rebirth. Therefore, it needs to be addressed here that happiness and suffering come about independent on causes.
他得了做事的是，俺做当时，俺其实不就是这个，俺其实俺就是地主些，当俺这个生下来没得，得那个车上，俺那几个制作些些的，第一农具热些的，第二把猪不炖巴那些农具热些，制作一个农具热嘛多，俺那俺这个来上俺就拿些些送给我们，其实他车上捷豹部的制作些些的，其实制作一个农具热些些送过来，其实第二一张，哎，其实第二一张的。
So then the text, and so we go, as always, go in the order of the Tibetan. So, such as fundamental nature or isvara, incongruous cause such as fundamental nature or isvara. So this again is presented because these are the views that some non-Buddhists hold, that the fundamental nature is often translated as the general principle that that this or a god such as isvara, they create things. It does, or that creates things. It does not come about independence and causes, but rather from a god such as Ishvara, or from a this fundamental nature or general principle, primal matter. It's from that that things come, not from causes. Isvara is an illustration of a creator god. So there are certainly those who have the belief that a creator god, such as Isvara, bestows happiness on some and suffering upon others, or sometimes bestows happiness, sometimes bestows suffering. So this is the view of some, of some non-Buddhists, whereas Buddhists will not accept this. Buddhists assert that the causes we create result in, if those causes are virtuous, happiness. If those causes are non-virtuous, suffering. They are not bestowed by some external entity. But the results of happiness and suffering come about independent on the causes that we create. To change English a little bit here. Therefore, happiness and suffering do not arise without a cause, such as the fundamental nature or Ishvara, or from an incongruous cause. So incongruous, or for me it's easier to pronounce a disharmonious cause, should come after this. So it's more of a list that without a cause being one, and not from fundamental nature or Ishvara, as two, and then thirdly, an incongruous cause or non-harmonious cause. So this third part, incongruous cause, this says that results of happiness and suffering come from their respective causes, not from causes which are discordant. That may be better, incongruous or discordant cause. Because a cause that leads to happiness is necessarily, or it can only be, a virtuous cause. Suffering, which is a result, itself comes from a cause, and that cause can only be, necessarily is, a non-virtuous cause. So an incongruous cause would be if virtue somehow led to suffering, which is not possible.
Gaveta, Migavi, Le, Chile, and Tedu Chichumus, Gavi, Leela, and Zidadu, Tijun, Tewachunata, Migavi, Leela, and the Dumachuare, said, Chesan Gavi, Le, Chile, Tedu Chidans, Chidan, and Lucine, Chihota, Kevalet, and Carimus, and Tewayungres. Kevadi, Kevai, Gavi, Lelet, and your mother, Migavi, Lelet, and Nigmar, Migavi, Lelet, and Migavi, Leda, Tewachuni, Mitim Bares.
So the first line we have that happiness and suffering do not arise from either a causeless or from incongruous causes or from a fundamental nature or Ishvara. So how do happiness and suffering arise? The next sentence makes this abundantly clear. Happiness and suffering in general arise respectively from virtuous and non-virtuous karma in general. Virtuous karma necessarily ripens into experiences of happiness, and non-virtuous karma necessarily ripens into suffering.
On the other side, Mithunba Gewe Leche Sashi Tele Mithunba Jebu Tunga Diye Yungu Mare Es. Ani Mithunba Gyu Migewa Sashi Tele Tine Jebu Tunga Diye Yungu Mare Es. Tine Inza Ta Ana Karirese Ne Gewa Dewa Seyadi Rangi Yu Wanchu Na Gyume Bala Mare Wanchu Na Sowe Cheba Mayimba Soso Rangi Gewe Leche Sawa Ina Tele Jebu Tunga Dewa Chiyungari Es. Soso Rangi Ne Le Migewa Sawa Ina Diye Jebu Tunga Yungari Es.
So therefore, what these two sentences show is that happiness is not causeless, nor is it bestowed by a creator God such as Ishvara, or general principle, what you have, a fundamental nature, nor does it come from a discordant or unrelated cause. Happiness, rather, comes from virtues, causes which are virtues. And so too with suffering. Suffering does not arise causelessly, nor is it inflicted upon us by a creator God such as Ishvara, or a general principle or fundamental nature, nor from discordant causes. It comes from causes which are non-virtuous. So therefore, both happiness and suffering come from causes that we accumulate. All the happiness and suffering that we have ever experienced and ever will come from causes that we accumulate.
Soso kanga che mawa che shanda chigi ene chi che che soso yu dunga seya yo mare chi hen chigi che che rangi che mawa che digi chubi yo mare sachi donda de disung gorwa da che sata soso yu dunga seya di soso rangi nyamlin che soso rangi bezo yu nyamlin che dunga se gore dingi dewa chubi ya tena soso rangi bezo yu nyamlin che ene digi chubi gore mato che shanda ki jikgo yu chen dunga che ya ta digi chubi ya ka yo mare sachi.
This is something really to take to heart. This, especially for those of you who have long been in Buddhism, this will be very obvious. You will have heard this many times. But we need to counteract a tendency to think that things befall us or one just got lucky. Nor should one think that someone else inflicted a situation on you, bestowing happiness or suffering. Rather, every experience of happiness or suffering comes from causes we create. It's not the happiness and suffering we experience. It's not in the power of others, nor some random good or bad fortune, but rather are results that have come about from their own specific causes.
Deduki Kabar Nasosa, Gabriel Yang, the Deva, Chunjun, Gabriel Deva, Chimboya, Gabriel Deva, Chuchimoya, Gabriel Deva, Chunjoya, Gabriel Deva, Junjibunia, Gabriel Dun, Deva Chuxilene, Meva Chadoya, the Deniki Devi Kabar, and Duma Inaya, Gabriel Duma, Masu Chuchimbo, Nyoya, Gabriel Duma, Dias, Mother Meva, Dene, and Duma de Gabriel Duma, Junjugo, the Yongwa, the Gabriel Duma, and Gera Yomoa Kaja.
Dhamma Tsongkhapa then continues. I'll just change the sentence in a couple of places. Also, the various specific instances of happiness and suffering each arise individually from the various specific instances of the two types of karma without the slightest inconsistency. What Lama Tsongkhapa is saying here is building on what has just been presented. So what's been presented is that happiness and suffering are not in the control of someone or someone else, nor are they random, but they are results that come about independent on causes that we ourselves have created. And this is the case for every instance of happiness or suffering, whether it is slight or intense, whether it is fleeting in duration, or that it has a result that lasts for a sustained period. Whatever it may be, it has come about independent on its own specific causes. So therefore, those karmic causes which lead to this wide variety of results, because of the wide variety of results, we can see that both there will be a wide variety of karmic causes, but within that wide variety will also be a wide variety in terms of their strength. The more powerful a karmic imprint is that ripens, the more intense the result of either happiness or suffering, and the longer period, the more protracted period of time that that result will last. The weaker the karmic imprint, the slighter the result of happiness or suffering will be, and that the result will be fleeting, as opposed to being for a longer period of time.
So we see this played out in the material world. For example, a fire that is huge will be difficult to put out, and the intense heat that it creates would cause intense suffering for those in its vicinity. Likewise, a very small fire that will easily consume its fuel and be extinguished. So we see from the strength of the cause, the strength of the cause has an impact on the intensity and duration of the result. So this is important to take to heart in addition to what was presented previously, which is that all the happiness that we desire comes about independent on causes that we create. But not only that, the quality of the causes and the strength, namely the strength of the intent behind what one does, this makes a great difference. Likewise with suffering. That all the suffering that we experience comes about independent on non-virtuous causes we've created. And the intensity of that suffering, or that it's minor, as well as the duration, whether it's fleeting or whether it's over a protracted period, this comes about independent on the strength of the karmic cause created. So this needs to be not just recognized, but taken to heart, that one needs to not only strive to accumulate virtue and abandon non-virtue, but the quality of the virtuous imprints one accumulates needs to be addressed as well. And moreover, where one recognizes one is engaged in some non-virtue, if that virtuous imprint was slight, caused some harm to others, but that harm was slight, then we know that that result will be minor. But if the harm we caused was great, we know that the suffering that will be experienced will be great. And then so too with virtue. If one has developed a powerful motivation and does engages in beneficial activities under that motivation, an incredible result will come. But if one is rather just going through the motions with some motivation, but just minor intent, then whilst a result of happiness will follow, it will not be nearly as large as it could have been if the motivation was so much stronger. So reading the sentence again. Also, the various specific instances of happiness and suffering each arise from their specific, various specific instances, each arise individually from the various specific instances of the two types of karma without the slightest inconsistency. This part of the sentence is similar to what was presented above, which is that from non-virtuous karmic imprints, only suffering can follow, and likewise from virtuous karmic imprints, only happiness can follow. There is no inconsistency there. It is just not possible for virtue to lead to suffering and vice versa. Moreover, a powerful karmic imprint will lead to a powerful karmic result. Likewise, a minor, a small karmic imprint, or a karmic cause, will only lead to a far smaller karmic result. So here there is no inconsistency in terms of this projection from the type of cause to the type of result to be experienced. The Lama Tsongkhapa concludes with, to gain certainty with regard to actions and their effects being certain and infallible is said to be the correct view of all Buddhists and praises the foundation of all virtuous phenomena. So gaining certainty with regard to actions and their effects, This then is this particular outline that karma is certain. Certain, or the same word, can be definite, so that one has no ambiguity in one's understanding that if a karmic imprint is virtuous, it can only lead to happiness. And if that karmic imprint is powerful, it will lead to a powerful and immense result, and vice versa. So they're gaining certainty of this, that, and it says further, that karma is infallible. Infallible is, or could be translated as, non-deceptive. There is no exceptions in terms of sometimes a virtuous causes can lead to suffering. That is not possible. Karma is certain or definite. And this is this correct view of all Buddhists, and praise is the foundation of all virtuous phenomena.
Looking to this little further, the second part of this final sentence is said to be the correct view of all Buddhists. Correct view of all Buddhists, usually when we hear this term correct view, what will come to mind is the presentation on reality, the cultivation of the wisdom realizing emptiness. And this is the way this term correct view is usually utilized. But correct view has a second meaning, which is the meaning here, the correct view in relation to cause and effect. So the correct view of cause and effect has largely been presented here, which is that from causes which are virtuous, happiness and happiness alone will follow. From causes which are non-virtuous, suffering and suffering alone will follow. Moreover, if those causes are slight or powerful, the result will be correspondingly slight or powerful. So this, and that there is no exceptions to this, that it is not infallible,
it's not at all deceptive, that it is always like this. This is also part of the correct view. And moreover, that every experience of happiness or suffering comes about solely independent on causes we've created. We never suffer because some external being is inflicting suffering upon us, or this is just bad luck. Likewise, with happiness, it's not just any happiness we experience isn't due to good luck or being bestowed blessings by some other entity. Rather, this comes about independent on causes that we have created. So this then is the meaning of correct view here, the correct view of cause and effect. And it's praised as the foundation or the root of all virtuous phenomena. In other words, by having this correct view, one will turn away from what will lead to suffering and embrace what will lead to happiness. So later comes the presentation of what it is that one needs to adopt and what one needs to abandon. But the very foundation is this understanding here of the correct view of cause and effect.
All right, that any ge de le kyun de nge ba da de ni ge ta che ba yin ba de ne ta wa de yang da ba ta wa de ngo su ji ge le yue na da ge wa tham ji ge ne ka she tham ji shi re se ni ge wi je ge tham ji shi re se de shi ze gyu dang ga ne gyu re se ne pe na ga de ne ji ta de ni di ba chung ju che ba na di ba dung ga yong ge se be ge da ta che ba da su su ge de ni ge ke lin be ta wa che ba ne di ba chung ji ne je ge zim ge ru wa o da ji ma de ga ma wa ba na di dung ga yong ge se 진행이 지금 해서 배치하다 디바 가르지 뇌비 자와 디비 자와 가르시네 근데 잼순 제야 되는 거라 다디 그래서 내 제바는 먹으면 지금 알 되는 지금 그래서 비 제부 누가 줘봐 하고 그걸 봐 하고 와서 제부 누가 되고 매 봐서 세상다 니 제헬이야 아니 지 제매야 아니 와 잼고 잼투야 용 거 다지 개화로 지나 치중 가르시네 디제 어디 제부 디기 지금 그래서 하고 해도 하고 와서 다와 지어 와서 어디 디진데 개화 충족 디제는 뭐뭐 반응아 디기 용구에서 몇 삼문자 디네에 개화 첨부 제야이 나라 충족에 나 낭매도 마셔봐도 충족 제야다 근데 지금 첨부 제야를 배준 제야다 근데 네게 에 개화 용구를 해서 디네에 자다 가르치기 개화 탐지기 제자다 뇌세 제야다 시한이 동아여야기 규디기 파 전부 인자 동아 용구 전비다 제대로 디 전부 아니가 저기 다 에 직신에 전에 이제 소화 수림선에 차로 주님이 자료를 와게와 난데 내게 아직 계획 자와로 체조 가르치네 제발 디티브 동어 용 디기 용바다 하고 해도 얘네 제게 제게 삼을 제게 제발 되게 되게 된바 대제발아 네 가와 전주리 걸어와 어디네 이제 지나다 루신에 아직이 가르쳐 탐지게 계획 개와 주위에게 계획 냠는 탐지게 시절로 차고 그래야지 빼 야부래 나 봐서 디 되게 따위에 삼다다 빼 야부래 해야지
So that we have, or whether we, or to what extent we have this correct view that of cause and effect, we need to look at within ourselves. And what should motivate us to look deeply within, look honestly within, is that we, Lama Tsongkhapa presents that this correct view is the foundation of all virtuous phenomena. In other words, it is the foundation by that leads to the accumulation of virtue and thereby the experience of desired virtuous results or the desired results from virtue. So when I encourage you then to look inside to see how well you have embraced this correct understanding of cause and effect, or this correct view of cause and effect. Because if you have merely understood it, it won't yet have been taken to heart. And this can be seen by how easily you turn away from slight non-virtue. If you have just largely just understood this intellectually, it will still be a challenge to turn away or even perhaps notice slighter non-virtues. Likewise, the second way to analyze how well one has taken to heart this correct view of cause and effect is the ease with which one embraces all forms of virtue, accumulating not just what is substantial, but slight virtue, and accumulating it well, in other words, wholeheartedly, with attention and so forth. And to the extent that one has taken to heart this presentation of cause and effect, or the correct view of cause and effect, to that extent, one will abide easily within the restraints of ethics. And not only that, this abiding within ethics will be joyous. One will take great joy in refraining from what one knows will lead to suffering, and one will take great joy in embracing what one knows will lead to happiness. So therefore, to measure to what extent one has taken to heart the correct view of cause and effect, look at how easily you abandon slight non-virtue and how readily you embrace even slight virtue, and thereby how joyously one engages in ethical restraint. And it's because of the great result that follows from understanding this correct view that it is praised, we have the word here, praised, as the foundation of all virtuous phenomena. And it's praiseworthy because of the great result that this understanding of this correct view, that living in accordance with this correct view leads to, that it is worthy of praise. The vast majority of non-virtue we accumulate is motivated by this mind of attachment. This mind of attachment which arises so easily and in relation to so many phenomena. This is the primary motivating affliction behind the non-virtue we engage in. To a far lesser extent, there's the mind of anger or the ignorance of not knowing. These two, anger and the ignorance of not knowing, or the ignorance of confusion, also lead to the accumulation of non-virtue, but is primarily that of attachment. So this ignorance of not knowing is where one lacks sufficient knowledge to recognize that this is non-virtuous and therefore should be abandoned, and that this is virtuous and therefore should be engaged in. So this is the ignorance of not knowing, it's a lack of knowledge. And anger is clearly recognized or clearly understood, but that of attachment, this is far more common because it arises so easily as a cause for non-virtue. So if we experience some physical pain or illness, so we recognize that a particular part of our body is afflicted, and therefore we are experiencing some pain, some suffering. So this we can recognize, we can say, this is wrong, therefore I'm experiencing this suffering result. But it's only at this most superficial of levels that we can directly recognize this the relationship of from this faulty limb, I'm now experiencing some pain. But where that illness or pain has come from is a karmic cause accumulated previously, probably in past lives. And that karmic cause would have been non-virtuous. It would necessarily or definitely have been non-virtuous. Therefore, it, when it ripens, will ripen into suffering. So that this illness comes from non-virtue. This is not something we can recognize as easily as which part of our body is out of harmony, and therefore we are suffering. Not only can we not recognize a specific karmic cause that has led to our illness, there's a tremendous variety in karmic causes that beings accumulate. And when one talks about karmic causes, one only can talk on a very general level. Because of this variety of karmic causes that beings accumulate, they will experience similar results in very different ways. So, for example, if several people are suffering from the same illness, the way their process of healing will be quite different. Some will heal very quickly, some will take a lot longer, and some may never heal. And this is because of the different karmic causes that are having an impact on each respective person. And likewise, in a car accident, from a certain type of car accident, someone will die, others will be injured, others will miraculously appear unhurt. And this difference comes about because of the specific individual causes that have led to this result, having great variety in there. So this is also an important point to bear in mind, just the wide variety of karmic causes that beings accumulate. a further benefit of taking to heart this presentation on karma. Again, not merely just understanding and accepting it, but that it impacts how you live your life, is that the way you experience a karmic result will be radically transformed. So if we think of one person experiencing a particular illness in two different ways, so illness befalls them, they're struck down with illness, they can respond to that illness in two different ways. One would be, oh, how awful this is, now I'm impeded in all the activities I have to do, I can't fulfill my responsibilities, my life is just so full of suffering, it's so unfair, this keeps happening to me, I'm sick again and again, and if I'm not sick, then it's something else that's going wrong with me, and I'm going to now have problems at my work, and my family are going to not be well looked after, and all these kinds of thoughts going on. So this person is just compounding the illness. The illness is of a specific level, but they are making the suffering, the way they experience that illness, vastly worse. Whereas if this person has taken to heart these teachings of karma, they will experience that same illness, because it's the same karmic imprint we're talking about for that same person. It will ripen, the illness will strike them, and immediately they'll recognize, oh, non-virtuous karma has ripened. This means that something, some harm that I caused in a past life, that I've carried with me into this life, has now matured, their karmic imprint has matured and ripened, and now I'm experiencing this. And they will look at this experience of suffering, or they will experience this suffering in a more detached manner, recognizing all that this suffering is that has arisen in the mind is a ripening of an imprint. That's all. Moreover, this non-virtuous karmic imprint that I've been carrying with me has now ripened. It's being exhausted. Fantastic. It is now one less suffering that will potentially hit me in the future. It is now being exhausted. So this is a very different way to experience the same ripening effect. It's a way that is not taking it personally, not seeing it as something inflicted upon you, but recognizing, but in a detached manner, recognizing it's just a suffering experience that has ripened. It's now just a particular karmic imprint that has ripened, nothing more. And actually, that is ripening now and being exhausted in this way is fortunate. I will never have to experience this imprint again. It's gone. So this is how a person who has taken this presentation to heart will experience suffering. If you take this presentation to heart, you will experience this benefit, that when suffering arises, instead of compounding that suffering by getting frustrated and annoyed at this inconvenience in your life and your bad luck and the rest of it, your mind will be light, detached from this problem, not at all overwhelmed by this suffering, and that will make your experience of the suffering so bearable. And this then is the foundation that is required for later to engage in the training of equalizing and exchanging self with others that bodhisattvas engage in. So bodhisattvas have a genuine or a sincere wish to experience the suffering of others. And they do so for two reasons. One is their incomparable compassion for others, desperately not wanting their kind mother-centered beings to suffer, and having the strong determination to do all they can to help others not to suffer, including experiencing the suffering themselves. So this is the power of their compassion. The second cause for them sincerely being wanting to take on the suffering of others is their knowledge that they can handle it. Because for a long time, every suffering experience that has ripened for them, they've dealt with it fine. And they recognize they can take on a lot more. It is not so hard for them. They can see how others compound their suffering by their unskillful way of thinking about it. This practitioner, this bodhisattva, has long overcome that. They know they can deal with far more than they are experiencing. They can take it on. And in this way, they actually do want to experiencing the suffering of others because, one, of their compassion, and two, they know they can handle it.
And in the other thing, we get to know the social immediate worry, so that the legate will mean the Yama to us, I do not give a legate. Mean other Yama Sashibi, we give it to all to go there, just not that more, but I know more chagrias and there's some time to Susuki that do not know the new key, same much of a same petty village shatu, a chagora, chagora, just a dinner, Nanjiki, do not see in Yaman Cablia, do not down in ye, Miss Sebastian Chorua.
And again, taking this this presentation on karma to heart will radically improve your practice of patience. Because when one then experiences something unwanted, whether it's from something material or something or from others, whatever it may be, you recognize that this is just a ripening of your karmic imprints. That's all. And relating to it in this detached manner is very far from how ordinary people do, who they get frustrated and annoyed because they are overwhelmed by what is actually just an experience of suffering. So a skilled practitioner has taken this presentation on the certainty of karma to heart. When they experience something unwanted, they'll be quite relaxed about it. They'll know all that this is the ripening of a non-virtuous karmic imprint accumulated in the past. That's all. It's not such a big deal. This way, their patience protects their mind from getting upset or frustrated at an unwanted experience. Rather, they can even be positive about it, recognizing of this the large store of non-virtue on my mind, this is now one less. And because of my skillful way of responding or reacting, I'm not replacing this one non-virtuous imprint with a new one. Rather, my burden of non-virtue is being reduced.
And Chu 디날이야 직 쇼고 도도라면 뭐 디날이 제 뉴버지 얘기다 쇼고네 얘기 뉴버 제디 강하셔 봐다 니네 요바디 건축이야 뉴비기 개발에 제디나 뉴비기 개발에 쇼고나 소용하다 조 조나 소용하다 니네 하고 두고 봐다 나도디 하고 두고 말아 도도지 어디 디게 하신 기게 맞답시 걸어 봐 제가 디 제가 니네 교수들 걸어 주고 쇼고래 디나데 뒤체다 제다 니네기 개발에 내 제보다 소바 개발해야지 잘 걸어 봐다 Dini zada, dini gidi nashiri, tam anuzugi, jiyoni anuzugi rapa rapa chima da hagu gomari. Dele shinju senribade, shib sobo che, dili kunzugi yaga yaga hagu du gyuza zi, dini dini zi, jibu dini zi yungguri, dini zi, chishu dini yungguri zi, dini hagu du guru ba. Dini nashiri tam anuzugi da, anuzugi ke wasa bada dini jibu yungguri zi, mige wasa bada jibu dunga yungguri zi, hagu wa zami mato, diyan mato, ani dini ki, Dina de Migi, you didn't in it. They would have a tenet, they would also put in the Yungu of a city, Mazuki, Sherago to go Marmas. Dina said that Yungu of the disabled of Pilamazon.
Has been made quite clear in this point. From a cause that is virtuous. Happiness and happiness alone will result. And if that cause is slight, it will be a slight result. If the cause was powerful, powerful, immense cause, so too will the result be immense. And likewise with non-virtue. So this is what one needs to gain certainty in. But we should guard ourselves from merely leaving it at that. Yes, we know I need to do this and not do that. And it's just something that does not have a transformative impact on how we live our life, how we keep our mind, keeping our mind virtuous and not allowing it to come under the influence of the afflictions. We need to be more precise with our understanding so that it has a more transformative impact. For example, farmers and gardeners know they need to plant a specific seed to achieve a particular plant. And so this is, we can liken here to a general understanding. From virtue comes happiness, from non-virtue comes suffering. So this is widely understood and accepted amongst Buddhists. But if this is the level of understanding of the gardener or farmer, the crop that results is probably not going to match their expectations or their hopes. Whereas if the gardener or the farmer has relied on the knowledge acquired by botanists who have studied this particular plant well, they will understand what type of soil is required, the amount of warmth and moisture required, and at what time period. And with all this knowledge, the seeds that have been planted will ripen and grow, and the crop will be not only the desired crop, but abundant. So in this analogy, we can see the difference between a general understanding that if I want to have potatoes, I need to plant the right seeds for potatoes and I'll have a field full of potatoes. If that's all that one knows, one may well end up utilizing the wrong soil, planting at the wrong time of year, and so forth. Whereas if one gathers knowledge and has understood this knowledge, and that knowledge impacts one's behavior, then one will have a field full of desired potatoes. So therefore, we need to not merely understand this presentation, but it needs to be integrated within us. We need to reflect well on this presentation so that it has an impact on how we live our lives. Of the four outlines in this general presentation on karma, that's the first, the certainty of karma. Then the second, that karma greatly increases.
So here we should understand this as being the karmic seed leads to a greatly increased karmic result. So from a small virtuous seed, great happiness can result. From a small non-virtuous seed, great suffering can result. Lama Tsongkhapa writes, even from a small virtuous action, there arises enormous happiness as its effect. While even from a small non-virtuous action, there arises enormous suffering as its effect. There is nothing among external causes and effects that resembles the increase of effects from internal causes.
And the Sabeka, the Chunjun Saba, and the Gawa, Devoti, and the Dewa, and the Yun Yungu, Nashin do Mongochi, or Yungu or Eje, that do not this one.
The first part of the sentence presents that from even a small virtuous action, or so this word action is just the English translation for the word karma, so from a small a virtuous karmic imprint, can arise enormous happiness as its result.
There's a
story that illustrates this of a child that was born to a family. And this infant, its hands were clasped tightly together in fists and would not naturally open. So the parents were worried about their child. So they forced the child's hands open to try and get the child not just to abide with fists. When they opened the hands, they found a coin in the palm of each hand. And then if they took the coin, the child would make a fist again. And if they opened the hands again, would be another coin. And this process would just continue. The family were impoverished. And in this way, the infants helped them tremendously.
And then, Dijelia, Pudia, Chemochai, and Dinima, and Jigge, Chemochai, and Dinne, Pukurong, Rabjun Chicken, Tubakia, Pamalanga, and the Jigge, Rabjun Chicken, Yashu, and then Pamiki and Jiggy, and Rabjun Jiggy, and Dush, Nang, Pamiki, Kilinje, Dennis, and you chimney, and Italia, change Rabjun Jugundu, Dinima, and the Rabjun Judita, Denma, Rabjun Jugundu, Calatelia, Gilong Mongurva, and Gilong Relia, Junior Charlie, said. Chama, Lapodu, Chimashadu, Setam La Choni, the Setam Ridge, Setam Ni Chagora, Chetan Giron, really a Setam Ni Duchin, Duchin Shara, as well.
Later, when the child grew, the child requested their parents for permission to ordain, and the parents agreed. So the Buddha, the child ordained with the Buddha, and having ordained, prostrated to each of the monks present. And when prostrated before the monks, the child put their hands down, palms flat on the floor. And when the child stood up, two coins were there for each monk. And in this way, offerings were made to every monk.
Andushine, Dakol Ming Serik, Serik, like is a Serik, Ming Dede, Serik. Is a tennis in the Koran do two in a tennis sign rub to Junji, tennis Sedelia, judgment of Tosan.
So this child was had the name of Serik, and in Tibetan, I don't know the Sanskrit, and later through striving went on to become an arhat. And as one would expect, the Buddha was asked, so what is the cause of this monk, Serik, being able to for coins to keep appearing in his hands? In answer to this question, the Buddha recounted that a previous Buddha, again the Tibetan Sertup, he and his entourage were offered a meal by a king of the king of the particular kingdom that they happened to be in.
Tene pribi kabliya michi yores, kyobu chiyores, korongi pe kyobu chiyo, koronga liyaka khalesine, nimiri hing tuyosu jeje zong je, dipa zong di yi,
And at that time, there was a child or a person who was impoverished because the only income they had, they could gather was from cutting wood and selling that. So this poor person, this woodcutter, he saw that the king was offering this a meal to the Buddha of that time and a large entourage, and sincerely from his heart rejoiced in what the king was doing, and the king's great fortune to be able to do this, and there's this person being impoverished, all that he had were two coins, which is what he had earned from selling wood. And this then he offered with this mind of deep faith to the Buddha.
kubade san yedan genin namge şey için tümüye nam. Cezan di midi de şey için dedi ma dedi bu uçun çun lafa serim yöken cihendi di midi reye cehde de dini gibi di dini gibi duşine hani cene çaçımı toya di midi nema dini çun var ya cezan sönem karasa var ya sene koy dini di kabili ya korongu gyoğu çeka şmebi kabili ya şinzoyaki serim ni yüp korpuyaki çun çun serim ni ma diyor maalesef. This is the first time that we have to do this. 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 We 你这部的那个给我这个事儿全部修中了的是的别生了的送过来的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是的是
This then, the Buddha recounted, was the karmic cause for just what this monk had achieved in this life. So because he made this offering, despite being impoverished, he made the offering that he could with a mind of deep faith and joy. The karmic result that then came wasn't merely that coins kept appearing in his hands, but that he was able to ordain again, and that his training went so well that he became an arhat. So the karmic result was not only that the coins appeared in his hand, but that he was able to meet the Dharma, have deep faith, ordain, and his practice went well, leading to becoming an arhat. From this story, what this story recounts is what we see in the first line, even from a small virtuous action, there arises enormous happiness as its effect. So the small action was that of offering two coins. But what amplified this cause to a great result is that in terms of this particular person's material capacity, he offered to the very limit of what was his capacity. He didn't just offer a small portion of what he had in excess that day, but he offered all that he could. And it wasn't only about the size of the offering that he made in relation to his capacity, but the quality of mind with which he made that offering. Deep and sincere faith in the Buddha and the ordained Sangha, as well as a mind of great joy in having this opportunity, and then his prayers and dedications that followed, his prayers with which he made the offering and his dedication that followed. So there were these amplifying conditions that went together with the offering that led to this great result. It wasn't merely giving two coins.
On
The meaning to take from this is perhaps twofold. Firstly, do not limit yourself by thinking, oh, there's nothing that I can do. Who am I? I'm such a nobody. What difference can I make? This way of thinking is deeply flawed. There is so much that can be done. And the second thing to take away is how one engages makes an immense difference. So, for example, if you encounter someone who's impoverished and suffering from hunger, it's quite normal for compassion to arise. But act under that compassion. When the compassion arises within you, do something to help. Even if all you can afford is to help them with a single meal, do that. It's not, in terms of financial terms, a big offering, but you are at least helping. And do so with this full expression of the mind of compassion that has arisen within you. Don't allow critical thoughts towards the person that you are offering, or negative thoughts towards yourself, or what this is all I can do. Rather, with a joyous mind of love and compassion, give to them. Give to them with tenderness and care. Give to them with joy at this opportunity of being able to do so. And in this way, by acting skillfully, a powerful result will come. And so this is very different from giving food, but you take care with the quality of mind with which you give. Likewise, when making offerings to the Buddhas or to one's teachers, then even if one is just making a small offering, do so with clear intent. Cultivate a powerful, virtuous motivation. And in this way, by offering skillfully, a greatly enhanced result will follow. And just to really drive this point home, that take care of your motivation behind your virtuous endeavors, because it makes such a difference to the karmic result that will follow. So if you looking around your house and you're thinking, really, I've just too many possessions, I need to get rid of some of this clutter. And then you maybe give it to an op shop, or you know someone who's impoverished and you give it to them. This is good to do, but take care of that motivation. Because really, from such an act done in this way, not much karmic benefit will come. Even if you're giving it to someone who desperately needs it, and they receiving great benefit from what you're doing, the karmic cause you are creating will be weak. Why? You're mainly doing so from self-interest. You're decluttering, you're making some space in your home, maybe you want to buy something new. And likewise, if one looks at one's shrine and thinks, oh, I have too many statues or whatever, I know, I'll give it to the monastery. Then, again, generally we'd say, oh, it's very good, you're offering statues to the monastery. But look at your motivation. Because when the motivation is of one of self-interest, it's not that one wouldn't say it's not an act of generosity, but it's not really much of an act of generosity. Because what defines an act as being generous or not is not so much about what is being given, but primarily about the motivation behind the giving. Hence, in the first illustration, where you're really just clearing out your house, perhaps to buy some new things, that's about self-interest. It's not so much about generosity. So therefore, take care of your motivation because of the difference it makes to the karmic results.
What I want you to take from this is not from this presentation on karma, it's not merely this is it's abandon on virtue and accumulate virtue, but to take this much deeper, to understand that
the attitude with which I engage in virtuous activities is incredibly important. It's the most important aspect. So when you set yourself on, I'm going to do something virtuous, make sure you take the time to cultivate an appropriate motivation. So I know many of you, you help a teacher center in various ways. Some may give of their time and share their skills and talents. Others may give financially. However you help, this is needed and it's beneficial. So that you do this is fabulous. But I encourage you to look at your motivation. Take that time to cultivate an appropriate motivation and engage with such a motivation. So whatever role you play here, whether it is merely as sitting in the audience and thereby making it possible that their teachings are given, do so with a virtuous motivation. Recognize just what a Dharma center is. And what the Dharma center primarily is a place where people can learn about the causes that will lead to liberation and where they have the opportunity to integrate those causes. So to hear teachings and to reflect on the teachings. Everything else are the various activities that make that core function possible. So wherever you contribute, again, whether it's only sitting in teachings or whether it's volunteering in some way or giving financial assistance, however it may be, do so with a clear recognition that I am contributing to help people gain freedom from suffering. And with such a motivation, a far greater karmic result will follow. So therefore, when one comes to teachings, for example, one does so with the motivation that in dependence on my presence, teachings will be given. I, amongst other students, enable the opportunity for teachings to come. May we all benefit, and through our spiritual development, may all beings benefit. And think in this way, generate joy, and then engage. And this then is, of course, the case with one's volunteering aspects or donations. Generate a clear understanding of why you are doing this, the benefit that will follow, and do so then with a joyous mind. Because then the same activity leads to so much merit being accumulated. And this way of thinking, take to other aspects of your life. So take your regular employment. Whatever one is doing, generate a virtuous motivation. So in some forms of employment, it's very clear, my work directly helps someone. But for most forms of employment, this may not be so clear. But nevertheless, you have work colleagues, you have people who rely on what you're doing, even if it's just administration. It is required. It is needed. You have people who are relying on you, and you have people around you, your colleagues, your customers, whomever it may be. Generate a motivation that through whatever you do, may benefit only come. And through whoever I connect with, may I bring benefit into their lives now and in lives to come. So this way, your regular daily activities can lead to the accumulation of extensive merit. And this then means we transform how we live our life into just from a life where one is just going through the motions of trying to gain experiences of pleasure and overcome experiences of suffering, to actually living a life of great meaning, a life where we accumulate the causes that will lead to lasting happiness for ourselves and others. So in particular, with overtly meritorious activities, such as hearing teachings, doing your own meditation, and so forth, generate a powerful motivation. But skillfully do so in other activities as well, because with a virtuous motivation, all that you do then can and will lead to virtue. Do this, and in this way, your life will be greatly meritorious. It will be a life of real value, of real meaning. So then, thank you. We can conclude there for this morning. If there are questions, then please feel free to ask. Then thank you. Enjoy your lunch.